getting some things set, making sure everything looks good here.
And then can I have you just say your name a couple times?
Zoe Engberg. Zoe Engberg.
Okay. Is that about how loud you'll talk?
Probably.
Okay.
Maybe a little, yeah.
That sounds, that's if you get really animated.
Okay, great.
So here's my opener is always, how many languages can you count to 10?
At least two. Okay. I think just two.
Is that Spanish being the second one?
No, that's French.
French?
English.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is 1 through 10 in French? I don't know if I've ever heard of them.
Is this going to make it onto the interview? Because my accent is appalling. Un, deux, trois, quatre, cinq, six, sept, huit, neuf, dix.
And did you get to go to France as part of that?
I studied abroad in France.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh.
So this wasn't just high school carryover.
Yeah, and then I lived in Montreal. I went to college in Montreal.
Oh, that's cool.
Just started speaking.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's the Paris you can afford to visit.
Exactly, yes.
Do they have that same I guess it's changing now. Like this Canadian-American relations is shifting again. Mm-hmm. And always had been, like Montreal was a little more, like, Toronto was more welcoming. That was like the New York mm-hmm. of Canada. So I'm wondering what the attitude is now for American tourists there.
I don't know. I was a university student there, and so I lived there and, you know, really loved it. I think that there's a long history between Anglo and Francophone people in Canada that is not always amicable.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
All right, don't mind me with this stupid thing. I'm just going to set it here. And then we're ready to go, Zach, whenever you're ready. Once I get that set up. I'll put it like at the back of the chair. It'll just help fill in the side of your face just a little bit.
Okay.
Cool. All right, all set.
All right. So we see a lot of television ads these days for the state Supreme Court race when they are all focused on sentencing issues. Mm-hmm. You know, someone let a pedophile go early with a slap on the wrist, or a wife beater, or they didn't handle the appeal right. What goes through your mind when you see those ads come across the screen?
Well, the short answer is that there is a lot of evidence that shows that when judges are making decisions in individual cases, part of their motivation behind their decisions is their own electability, their own prospects in future election campaigns, and particularly the impact that negative ads could play on those campaigns. And in particular, the evidence shows that judicial candidates, regardless of political affiliation, regardless of what their constituencies want, they become uniformly more punitive and more pro-prosecution when an election approaches. So, for example, there is a lot of evidence that when judges are approaching an election, they sentence people more harshly than they do at other points in their term. And there's also a lot of evidence that shows that negative campaign ads in particular have a large impact on how judges make decisions in cases. So for example, in jurisdictions where a lot of money is being poured into judicial elections, where there is a high level of TV ads and negative attack ads in judicial races, judges in those jurisdictions are more hostile towards defendants in criminal cases, more punitive than judges in other jurisdictions. And I think that this is a real problem because it indicates that judges, when they are making decisions in individual cases, they are making those decisions while thinking about their own careers and out of a self-preservation interest, not because they think that that is the decision that is the most fair or just outcome in a particular case.
So we have these two particular candidates in this election, and there's only so many spots. The vast majority of judges around the state know that they're likely not going to be Supreme Court candidates. But does this still affect them?
You know, I can't comment on any particular judge or on the candidates in this race or in this race in particular. But in general, judges run for re-election in this state. And there is a lot of evidence that shows that when judges know that they will have to run for re-election or run for election for a new position, that prospect of whether they will be electable in their upcoming campaign impacts what decisions they're making in individual cases while they're sitting on the bench.
Well, I guess let me rephrase that, because in most of those local elections, the county elections mm-hmm. for a judge, there aren't television ads. Most of those go fly beneath the radar. Many of them are unopposed, but there's still that prospect of having to stand for election. Most of the races are appearing in these Supreme Court elections, and not commenting on the individual candidates running, those ads still affect the mindset of potential judges or judges everywhere across the state, even though they're unlikely to face a million-dollar barrage of ads against them, right?
I think that's certainly true, that all judges are concerned about re-election, regardless of what sort of race they'll be running in. And also, election ads and campaign ads and negative attack ads influence voters in all races, even if it's not necessarily the race that ad is being run in.
Why do the negative ads work so well? What is it about the ads that talk about, you know, a light sentence or a slap on the wrist or all these things? Why does that strike fear in voters and make them fear putting this person on the bench?
You know, I think that's a great question. I think there's a couple of reasons why these negative attack ads are so effective in these judicial races. You know, one thing I think that is really important to consider is just the nature and format of an ad. Ads are typically 30 to 60 seconds long. They are almost uniformly pro-prosecution, painting an opposing candidate as being soft on crime. And typically what they do is they pull an individual decision or an individual case and present maybe the most inflammatory facts about that case to the viewers without providing any of the context that's really necessary for understanding why the outcome of that case may have actually been appropriate in that case or why the judge made that individual decision in that case. And there's a lot of research that shows that voters and members of the public, they actually don't necessarily want incredibly punitive sentencing, but it all depends on what information they have when they're judging whether a sentence is too harsh or too lenient. So when somebody only has the headlines, only has, you know, the crime that somebody was convicted of and the sentence that was imposed, they tend to think that judges were too lenient and should have imposed a harsher sentence. But when a voter or a member of the public has the full context, all of the information that a judge considers when imposing a particular sentence, so, you know, the background of the person being sentenced, what their life has been like, the circumstances of the crime, any mitigation that may have been presented to the judge, then people actually think that judges tend to impose sentences that are too harsh and too punitive. But in a 30-second ad or a 60-second ad, it's really difficult to get that full context. So all voters have are these headlines, which tend to kind of inflame them and make them want people to be sentenced more punitively.
But you never see an ad saying, this judge imposed way too long of a sentence on this person. Why doesn't that work the opposite direction?
I think that it's just a much more difficult story to tell when we're talking about campaign ads. You know, often when you're talking about judges who are too punitive or too harsh, which I do think that if a voter, again, was fully informed, many voters might think that some judges are too punitive or too harsh. Voters tend to prioritize public safety. They tend to prioritize crime prevention, not necessarily the most punitive or the most tough on crime approaches in individual cases. But telling a story about a judge who is too punitive or too harsh often requires a lot of information about the history of mass incarceration in our society, the impact that that has had on our communities and on families. That is a very difficult story to tell in 30 seconds or 60 seconds, but pulling details or information out of one particular case and presenting it without context to viewers, that is a much easier story to tell within the format of a campaign ad.
Do you think we could ever see a case where someone who was sentenced comes back a year or two down the road and says, that judge sentenced me more harshly than they should have because they were about to run for a high-profile office and they couldn't afford to look soft and my sentence is way out of line and it seems a clear straight line from them being about to run for office and me getting this harsh sentence?
I think that certainly could happen. You know, right now we are revisiting a lot of the incredibly punitive sentences that were imposed back in the 1990s during the tough on crime era. You know, I run the criminal defense and youth advocacy clinic here at UW Law School. We represent a lot of people who were convicted and sentenced as children, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, back during this era where judges were imposing incredibly harsh and punitive sentences. And now, as a society, we're really revisiting that type of sentencing. And questioning whether that was really appropriate or just or necessary at the time. And a lot of people, I think, have really changed their opinion about really excessive sentences, particularly for children. And I certainly think that because we are now more open to that kind of review of sentencing as a society, we've seen people who had these incredibly harsh sentences imposed, and we've been able to question whether that was really appropriate or necessary in those cases. I hope that we are now open to questioning incredibly harsh sentences that judges impose.
Is it even more offensive in the sensibilities of justice that these campaign ads for Supreme Court are being run on these issues when Supreme Court doesn't sentence anyone? Like, the disconnect between what they're actually doing versus what the campaign is being driven by is could not be wider.
I think that's certainly true. And I think that this is something that is just, it's such an easy way, and it's such a common way of attacking judicial candidates, taking one individual case, one individual decision, and attacking an opposition for that decision, regardless of whether that's going to be something that a decision that the candidate is expected to make in their new position. And there have been other states that have really tried to curb the influx of these negative and misleading attack ads in their Supreme Court elections in particular. So for example, in some states, candidates have all agreed to run clean campaigns where they all agree to refrain from running misleading negative ads against their opponents. And I think that this is really a huge step forward to preserving judicial independence and making sure that when judges are making decisions in individual cases, they are making the decision that they think is fair and just and appropriate for that case, for our communities, not something that is just the best decision for their own personal career.
So what's it like for you personally when you see some of these ads? I mean, whether you know the details of the case or not, are you like screaming at your TV, or what's that like?
I think the difficult thing about watching these ads is that so much of the context is missing, and that viewers are not really being given the information they need to understand the outcome of this particular case. You know, a lot of attack ads of this nature, about individual cases, about individual decisions made by judges, often are attacking judges for fairly typical decisions that almost any judge would have actually made given a similar case in similar circumstances. But because many viewers of these ads don't spend a lot of time in criminal courtrooms, they don't really understand what is a typical outcome of a case, and the ad is not giving them that information, it comes across very differently because they're lacking that context.
So there are fact checks that the newspaper will run or TV stations mm-hmm. occasionally will do, trying to give some of that context. Can that in any way compare in like the scope or the reach that the actual campaign ad in the first place?
I certainly think that that's important to make sure that campaign ads don't include misinformation. However, often I think what the problem is it's not necessarily that the facts in the ad are incorrect or wrong. It's just that the context that's necessary for understanding this particular decision, this particular outcome of a case, is missing from that ad. And so it's you know, you can provide that context, but again, that's a much more difficult, a longer story to tell that doesn't fit within a 30 or 60 second ad in the same way.
I think you might have mentioned that you know you can give some examples of some people that you think have been negatively impacted in this fashion.
Sure. I've certainly appeared in front of judges and worked with judges who have been the recipients of negative attention, negative ads, because of individual decisions that they've made in particular cases. You know, I think a fairly common one is a judge who lets somebody out who is charged with a fairly minor crime on bail, you know, before their trial. And then that person, very unforeseeably, is then charged with a much more serious crime while out on bail. And again, that's a decision that, given the facts that were available to the judge at the time, it's a decision that almost any other judge would have made too, just given the nature of the original charges. But because, you know, this very unfortunate and unforeseeable thing happened in this particular case, that judge is really raked across the coals by the media, by their opponents, because of that, and really blamed for what happened, again, pretty unforeseeably. And you know, the impact of this is that I think it motivates judges to always err on the side of being more punitive, and make decisions kind of because in the back of their mind they're thinking, what will this case look like in an election ad in my next re-election?
And the study that you sent me looked like it was from the 90s, mm-hmm. principally in Pennsylvania, but it cumulatively said there were thousands of years added on, according to the estimate. Can you walk me through how they can make that conclusion?
Sure. So that was a study that looked at a decade's worth of sentences imposed in Pennsylvania by judges in criminal cases. And they found that when judges were approaching re-election, on average, their sentences became much more punitive and much longer than at other points in their term. And that was true regardless of what jurisdiction they were running in. That was true regardless of their own political affiliation. Across the board, judges became more punitive as their election approached. And you know, they were able to look, because they had such a large data set, they looked at such a wide array of cases over such a long period of time, they were able to really see how these trends developed and point to, I think it was about 2,000 years of incarceration over the space of a decade that was directly attributable to re-election and not just typical sentencing.
And that was a few decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the problem's gotten any better or gotten worse?
You know, I think that that's hard to say. I do think that we still see massive amounts of money being poured into judicial elections, and that leads to a lot of television ads, which reinforces a lot of these problems and these fears that judges have when they're making decisions in cases. Again, I think that having judges all while running in a race against each other agree to refrain from running misleading ads, that would go a long way towards solving this problem.
All right. Walk me through a little bit of what you do as part of the project. Is that the correct title?
So I run a clinic here at the law school. So as part of the clinic, it's the Criminal Defense and Youth Advocacy Clinic. We represent people in Wisconsin prisons who were convicted and sentenced to extreme sentences as children and young adults. And the students who are students here at the law school, the law students work on these cases with me. They represent clients and they work to try to mitigate the sentences, try to advocate for our clients, especially in consideration of the fact that they were children and young people when they were originally convicted and sentenced.
And what kind of success have you seen?
We've seen some success. We certainly have seen that sentencing has changed here in Wisconsin since the 1990s and early 2000s when many of our clients were convicted and sentenced. The sorts of incredibly excessive sentences that were being handed down at that time are not really being imposed today in the same way. Today we now understand a lot more about how children's brains work, that children are more impulsive and more reckless because of their age, because of their undeveloped brains than adults, and therefore much less culpable and much more capable of rehabilitation. And one of the problems, though, is that there's really a lack of access to resentencing here in Wisconsin. You know, in many other states, people who were children and sentenced to extreme sentences back in the 90s, they have since been given new resentencing hearings where they can come back in front of a judge and challenge the sentence that was originally imposed based on kind of this new understanding that we have about children and about how children should be treated when they are charged with crimes. And here in Wisconsin, we haven't had that wave of resentencings, and there's really no mechanism that our clients can use to challenge these original sentences.
Okay. Can I get you to say and spell your name and give your title?
Yes, my name is Zoe Engberg, Zoe Engberg, and I'm an assistant clinical professor here at UW Law School and the director of the Criminal Defense and Youth Advocacy Clinic.
All right, anything else you want to add that we might have missed?
No.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
If you want to hold still for just a bit, you want to get some room tone?
Yeah, that just maybe like 10 seconds or so.
Okay, we'll just be quiet and listen to the room.